Today on Maine Calling, an exploration of Maine surnames. As you drive around Maine, certain names tend to pop up, maybe on the sign of a local store or a neighborhood park or some historic marker. That's because there are certain family names that are more Maine-ish than others. Just a few examples: Merrill, Libby, Pelletier. I'm Cindy Hahn. As part of our series Name Calling on Maine Calling, we'll dig into the history and family stories behind certain surnames that are common or more prominent or unusual in Maine. Some of these reflect cultural backgrounds, from Franco-American to Wabanaki to Irish. Others are found in specific geographic regions. We'll also find out what goes into researching the genealogy of Maine families and tracing names back through the generations. What surname are you curious about? Maine Calling is coming right up.
Maine Calling is made possible in part by Maine Seacoast Mission, delivering health care, education, and support to islands and coastal Downeast communities. Learn more at seacoastmission.org. And by Verrill, committed to delivering trusted legal services in Maine and throughout the Northeast for 163 years. Learn more at verrill-law.com.
This is Maine Calling. I'm Cindy Hahn. Are there certain last names in Maine that you notice all the time? Have you ever wondered if there are stories behind common Maine surnames? Today, we'll delve into family names that stand out for being common or uncommon in Maine. And we'll learn how to go about researching your family history. This show is part of our series, Name Calling on Maine Calling. My guests are Jamie Kingman Rice, Deputy Director of the Maine Historical Society, and Nancy Prisk, genealogist specializing in Maine family roots. We invite you to join the conversation. Do you have questions about your last name or a surname that you hear a lot of in Maine? Email talk@mainepublic.org, post a comment on social media, or give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. And a quick reminder, that is our Maine Calling phone number. It's different than the one for Maine Public's membership drive. So Maine Calling's phone number again, 800-399-3566. Jamie, let's start with you. We are talking about last names in Maine and about some of the common ones, but we sort of have to get out of the way that there's a whole list of very common names that we probably won't be talking about that much because they're the same ones that have been common since the 1800s and are the case across the country. So start us out with those to get them out of the way.
So I think, you know, in Maine, there are some names that are really maybe more so unique to Maine. And then there are names in Maine that are common and are common across the United States, even since the colonial period. Names like Allen or Smith or Davis, you know, are certainly very prevalent, statistically very prevalent in Maine, but could be really seen anywhere throughout the country. And then when you look at Maine, something that really sounds like a Maine name, you know, you think about Dyer or Merrill or Estes, Libby or Jordan. These names are closely associated with Maine. So it's kind of two sides of the coin. While there are lots of people across the state with all sorts of names like this, you can see that some are uniquely Maine names.
So no offense to our executive producer, Jonathan Smith, but we won't dwell on Smith. I understand that that's been the most common one since 1880 or something. But you mentioned that some jump out and you have this wonderful job where you get to read people's family stories and research them just for fun and for work. So in the course of doing this, you said there's certain names that really jump out. What makes you say, oh, that's a real Maine name?
I think the prevalence of kind of tying a name to a certain place in Maine, kind of drawing a name that sort of matches a community or a geographic designation. You might take something like Jordan, which is very prevalent in Cape Elizabeth. And then you've got things like Estes, which is very common down east. And then you've got other names, which maybe aren't as prevalent, like Blanchard or Knight or Fogg, which also have a real connection to a place like Cumberland or Kittery or Westbrook. So you can kind of see these pockets of surnames in different places. So when people come into Maine Historical Society to do genealogical research and they have a name like that, typically right away we can associate that with a specific town or place. And so it helps if you don't know a lot about what you're looking for, it helps.
So it's kind of a chicken and egg thing. The reason that some of these names show up a lot in your research is because in the first place, there was a family that was prominent and they named the town or they named a park after them. Or is it that the other way around? I don't know what I mean.
Yeah, it's I think because the family is prominent. And then you also have to think about things like marriage and, you know, in Western culture, you know, the marrying into a family and taking on the surname, how a woman takes on the traditionally takes on a surname. So it has something to do with that. So it's sort of the longevity of a name. And then you get into places like naming sections of town, naming neighborhoods, naming streets, naming parks. And so that also kind of showcases the prevalency of certain names. So I think it's a little bit of both, but I would say the people came first and then, you know, sort of establishing roots in a certain area gives a little bit of longevity to that name.
Sure. Okay. Well, Nancy, let's turn to you because as a genealogist, you also, like Jamie, get to spend a lot of time reading through family stories, digging into the history. Tell us how you got started doing this. It had to do with your own mother's story?
Yes, it did. I actually was 12 years old and my mother had received a copy of her family history. Now, it was not a main family, but it was a prominent family in New England. She was the youngest of seven children and her name was not in that book. So my mother was absolutely determined. The book had just been published and she wanted to add her name. So we spent many summers and some weekends in the communities where her family had settled in New England. And we went through the courthouses, we went through deeds, we went to churches, we did all the hands-on land things that we could do before we started looking at digitized records, which became more prevalent around the pandemic. And as I worked with my mother, I realized the value of looking at a history to help us identify who we are. So when my children were born, I actually created a class that I taught in their elementary school on math and math, how you use that to determine your generations, how you use skills that they were already learning in their classrooms to help piece together their families. And then both children sailed ahead and did their own research following that. And I've been working with them, but also working with clients. I'm listed at the Maine State Library.
And you mentioned a few of the ways, the methods that you do follow these trails, these family trails. And I know you were talking to me earlier about breadcrumbs. You follow the breadcrumbs. So give us some examples of good sources for family information.
I'll follow something Jamie said about identifying with place. So as an example here, I'm in Orono right now, and down the road in Hamden is an old piece of family property. And there are names that are associated with that area, Snow, Hopkins, Lineal, Pomeroy. And the desire of a family member was to make a connection to their earliest roots. And I started by looking very broadly at community histories and gathering the surnames and the places and the dates. You have to put it all in order of the people that lived in the community where this land is located. And so I pieced together a broad picture that gave me a canvas on which to start to place the locations, the relationships. And that particular project took me to special collections here at Vogler Library, University of Maine. I was down in Portland researching at Maine Historical, Augusta. Hamden Historical Society had some excellent records. A lot were personal records and files. And Bangor Public Library, those were the key places that I started. I gathered community histories, and then I sat down with those names, and I started to piece them together. So once in a while, I'll hear a client say, oh, I don't need to know who the women were in the family. I just want to know the list of the men. Well, you really need to know both, and you need to know the dates as best as possible, and you need to know the locations, and then you can start to create this jigsaw puzzle. You're asking about specific references. One that I think you've covered in Maine Calling before is Martha Ballard's diary. And I have used her diary now twice to solve those known to be brick walls with families that came to the Kennebec River area early. And Martha would record maybe Baby Boy Savage. And I was able to go back through records and piece together that Savage family and determine that Baby Boy was Benjamin. And that was the key piece to solving a case.
So much detective work and those diaries. So if you ever have a family member who left a diary, that's a good treasure trove. That's wonderful. Let's go now. Joining us now is Patrick Lacroix. He is the director of the Acadian Archives at the University of Maine in Fort Kent. Thanks for calling, Patrick.
Thank you.
So
Yeah, it's a
we
pleasure
all.
to be joining you.
Yeah, good to talk to you. That we do know that Franco-Americans make up a major segment of Maine, and it's noticeable in the last names that we hear all over the state. So give us a sense of some of the origins of these French family names in terms of when was there a big group of French immigrants or French Canadian ones coming into Maine?
Yeah, sure. So one thing to keep in mind as we talk about the chronology is that there are two major French ancestry groups in Maine. You have the Acadians who came originally from Nova Scotia and New Brunswick, and others who came later, French Canadians who came from the St. Lawrence River Valley. And each of these groups has its own distinctive surnames. There's a little bit of overlap, but some are quite unique. So in northern Maine, for instance, you have a lot of Sears, Thibodeaux, Daigles, Thériaults, and those are distinctly Acadian. And we have a presence in Maine that dates from before Maine was a state, from the 1780s along the St. John River. And eventually that population moved a little bit further south, inland, into some of the mill centers. And then, especially in the 1860s and 70s, we have a huge influx of folks from the St. Lawrence Valley, from Quebec. And they bring names like Cody, Gagnon or Gagnon, as we often hear, Boisvert, that became Greenwood, Michaud, Pelletier or Pelletier. And I think that's really interesting to see how many of these names changed once they got to Maine. We see a lot of anglicization. Sometimes it's phonetic, sometimes it's a direct translation. But it's also worth, it's worth mentioning that historically a lot of those names had changed in New France before people even came to Maine. And we see that because people come over from France, they have their patronym, the name of their father, and very early in that period, and we don't often know, exactly the circumstances, but they gain nicknames, surnames, and those over time very often replace the original name. So we have La Bonté. The goodness, and it's just based oftentimes on people's personal characteristics or their trades. So you have a lot of la or le, which is a an article, and then followed by personal characteristic or an occupation. So that is very common among names in Maine, French Canadian names.
Well, then what about your own last name, Lacroix, Lacroix, however you pronounce it, the French way, not the anglicized way, right?
That's right. Although I have a lot of relatives who moved to Vermont and New York and other places, and they became Lacrosse or Cross. But the process is often dependent on whether a person is moving into an area that would be majority French. So in Lewiston and Biddeford, it was a lot easier for people to maintain their last names, partly because the local clerks who might record them or the local enumerators might be French-speaking as well, so they might be able to convey the name as it was spoken and spelled back in Quebec. But that's, of course, not often the case. So we see as people, for instance, move away from the St. John River Valley, they move towards Cariboo and Millinocket and Ashland and a little bit further south into areas that are more sparsely French, then they need to anglicize. And we see that happening often just so they can, interact with their neighbors. And often as well, it's their employment is contingent on being able to assume an English identity. So that's where we see a lot of anglicization and, as I said, Pelletier becoming Pelkey, or names like Lévesque being translated as bishop.
Well, you mentioned Pelletier, Pelletier, whichever pronunciation. That was the one that I saw on that list of the most common names in Maine that actually come in as number 11. It was the only one that wasn't Anglican sounding. Do you know if there's a reason that in particular, that family had a lot of, spread here in Maine, or why would that be?
Yeah, it's very common here in Fort Kent, from where I'm joining you today. But there are different waves. So there are some that move to from that family who move through the St. John River Valley. They have large families of their own. They intermarry. But we also have a different current of people coming a little bit later and moving further south in Maine. So it's almost like a double-pronged immigration with people bearing that last name. And oftentimes, there's a little bit of, I don't know enough about biology, but luck, if you have more male descendants, for whatever reason, or more male descendants have children, then that name is going to be carried on. So it's not necessarily that they had more children or more descendants as a whole, but there were more people to carry that name through the generations.
Wow, so interesting. Well, thank you, Patrick. I know we could do a whole show on how to pronounce names. Patrick LaCroix directs the Acadian Archives at UMaine Fort Kent, and we are going to take a break now. This is Maine Calling. We'll be back soon.
What's in a name? Well, as we're learning, it's about a place. And Nick, it's just another great conversation we're having on Maine Calling. Hi, Keith Shortall here, senior editor at Maine Public, and I'm here with my colleague Nick Woodward, who is the manager of TV production. And, you know, I'm thinking about, as I'm listening to this conversation, about the names in my own community. I'm from Thomaston up in the Mid-Coast, and I went to school with a number of kids named Watts was the last name. And, in fact, the house I live in was in the Watts family for 200 years. So it's a name that I really associate with the place. I also think about the Scandinavian names, like my own family name, Swanholm, and also the Finnish community, the Harjulas, so many more. But anyway, it really just reminds me that we all have a kind of a story of a place we're from, and the names really are reflective of that. And where else are you going to hear that kind of a conversation except on a program like Maine Calling? Show your support now, 1-800-866-1475, or online at mainepublic.org.
Yeah, we're going back to more of the conversation in just about 2 minutes, but we are taking this break to let you celebrate shows like Maine Calling, a kind of unique show here in the state of Maine. Every weekday, an hour-long topic, you never know what you're going to get, but it's always interesting, always worth listening to, always worth supporting too. And that's why we are asking you to support right now. It's easy to do. It's you call 1-800-866-1475. You can go to mainepublic.org. You can do it there, and you'll talk to one of the great volunteers or some staff members that are here today. They're ready to take your call and to welcome you into this family. And you'll go back to Maine Calling, where we talk about family names, knowing that you are now a member of this family too.
Yeah, indeed. And this is part of your daily routine. You know, I'm sure you're listening now and you tune into Maine Calling. You schedule your day around it and you look forward to learning something or maybe even taking part. You're hearing from newsmakers, you're hearing from artists, from writers, and you're hearing from your neighbors and you're connecting with them. That's what Maine Calling does, and that's what Maine Public does as well. Show your support, 1-800-866-1475, or go to mainepublic.org.
And 75% of what it takes to bring you everything you hear on Maine Public Radio, whether it's Maine Calling, Morning Edition, Here and Now, Jazz, Down Memory Lane, Classical Music, the weekend shows, whatever it is here through member support. And that's why your call is so important. So we ask you in this 30 seconds before we go back to the more Maine Calling, give a call to 1-800-866-1475 or go to mainepublic.org. And when you go back to Maine Calling, you are going to listen differently because you are knowing, you will know that you are helping to tell these stories for and you know for yourself and your neighbors. 1-800-866-1475 or mainepublic.org and thank you.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Cindy Hahn. We are learning about Maine surnames and how certain family names are prevalent or notable and what the stories are behind them. With me are Nancy Prisk, genealogist based in Orono, and Jamie Rice with the Maine Historical Society. Share your comments and questions. Have you delved into your family history? Email talk at mainepublic.org, comment on our Facebook page or Instagram, or give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. Jamie, in listening to Patrick talking about all the interesting names and reasons for these names, just give us some context for the significance of the Franco-American community in Maine's history.
Well, the Franco-American community, like the Irish-American community or Italian communities, are really tied to migration and to opportunity, and especially tied to the economy. So you do see a large influx of Franco-Americans or immigrating from Canada to work in textile mills or mills in general. And this is sort of a multiple wave. You know, in early in mill history, you see a lot of young women, and then it sort of shifts to Irish Americans, and then eventually to Franco-Americans. So people moving to Maine for economic opportunities, the growth in the textile mills specifically, will in need of labor. And so you can follow these patterns through the different decades in Maine and tie that pretty closely to the economy.
Well, you mentioned the Irish community, and we have now calling in Helen Frazier. She is a volunteer genealogist with the Maine Irish Heritage Center. Thanks for joining us, Helen.
Hi, Cindy.
So Jamie mentioned a little bit about this, but I mean, I read that one in six Mainers have some Irish roots. And so can you kind of follow up what Jamie just talked about in terms of the wave of people coming from Ireland? Was that significant in a certain period of time?
Yes. In my research, find that they started around 1830, and that was when the famine was just getting started. And from there, into the 1900s, and they just kept coming. There were so many large families in Ireland, and the jobs were so few, especially where a lot of them from this area come from, which is called Connemara in Ireland. Their families were large, 10, 15 kids, and there was no work. They were farmers and fishermen, and there was no place for them to go. So they came to the United States to get jobs, railroad, longshoremen. A lot of them came all together to Portland.
Yeah, and I understand you have done a bit of research on your own Irish roots. And did you learn much, and was it hard to find the information?
It was very hard. My family were Donahues. It took me probably 20 years to figure out that they came to Island Pond, Vermont, which was railroad. And then from there, I was stuck forever. So finally, I did a DNA test. And once I did that, I found Donahues, because I was related to no Donahues. And when I found the Donahues in Ireland, I've since run a lot of DNA tests, Big Y, on males, and I found 7 or 8 male Donahues in Ireland that I'm related to, which is pretty amazing.
Did you reach out to folks?
Yes. I have several cousins that I talk to in Ireland quite often. One of them is a 93-year-old priest, and he's wonderful. He helps me from the town he is from is Spittal, and that's where a lot of us in Portland area come from, Spittal. It's just outside of Galway.
Interesting. And I know, like you mentioned, there was a lot of more concentrated groups coming to southern Maine. That's why Portland, right? And just working with the Irish Heritage Center, have you encountered that certain Irish names are the most prevalent in Maine?
Yes. In the Portland area, which is where we do most of our research, because at the Maine Irish Heritage Center, the church was the Irish church, the St. Dominic's Church. And from there they were all right in that region, right in the west end. And they had Coins, Currans, Lydens, Foleys, Flahertys, a lot of names you hear quite often, just in general. And Feeney is one. John Ford, the producer John Ford, his name was originally Feeney. There's a lot of them.
Yeah, definitely. I've heard every one of those names in my community. So thank you for sharing some of that. That's really great to learn. So Helen Frazier is with the Maine Irish Heritage Center. Thank you, Helen. And let's go to a call now. This is Kate calling in from Limerick. Hi, Kate. What did you want to talk about?
Hi. My last name is Simmons, but I grew up in Chicago. My family's from Indiana and Kentucky. And when I moved to South Thomaston, I noticed just down the road there were so many Simmons in Friendship and Waldoboro. And I was wondering if any of the guests knew why.
gosh, Nancy, I'm going to see whether that's something you've encountered in your research.
It's not specifically a name that I've encountered, but during that break, Keith mentioned Watts. And actually, I used to live in Thomaston many years back and was involved in the schools. And I noticed that the names interconnect with other names along the coastline. And I have done recently a project in Deer Isle. I didn't see Simmons, but I saw other names that I've also seen in Thomaston. So if the shipbuilding industry was the key employer, or if families were coming into the area, they would come up the they'd come up the rivers coming from Boston or perhaps south and settle along the rivers. And that's where these smaller communities were established. And as mentioned before, I do a lot of work with the migration of families. And what you want to look for, too, in your Simmons, did they leave the state of Maine? And if they did leave, why? Where did they go? Where did they establish? And if you're putting together a family history that starts in Maine or starts with people coming to Maine, you also want to look at where they traveled after they left Maine. I get requests for people looking for a family name, and they give a first and a last name, maybe a maiden name, but no dates, no locations, and you need that data before you begin. But I certainly would begin right in your own backyard, Kate, because it looks like you may have some family nearby.
Kate, I hope that's helpful. I think a great theme that you keep repeating, Nancy, is that the movement of people is what tells you a lot of clues. So interesting. Well, calling in now is Charlene Clemens Fox, and she's the cataloger and special collections manager for the Ellsworth Public Library's Genealogy Collection. Thanks for joining us, Charlene.
You're welcome. Nice to be here. Thank you.
I understand that the genealogical collection at the Ellsworth Library is quite significant. What is it that sets it apart?
I think it's the breadth of the collection. We don't focus just on Ellsworth. We focus on all of Hancock County. And because we know that we didn't all come up the river into Ellsworth on day one, that we landed probably in Massachusetts or Canada or someplace other than Maine, we've branched out so that we have records from several different areas.
And in all your decades of work with the genealogy in Maine, I'm sure you've learned a lot about various families. Are there certain last names that just jump out as notable or have interesting stories behind them?
Well, I think in this area, Hadlock on Mount Desert Island is a big name because one of them was hanged at Pownalboro as a murderer back in the early 1800s, late 1700s. That makes
so it's not always for good reasons that the names stick around, huh?
No, but, you know, you take the good with the bad. Mm-hmm. Somebody once said, what do I do if I find a horse trader on my tree? And, you know, you hang him on the branch. He belongs there.
Significant, at least,
yes.
Right?
Yes.
Wonderful. And for anyone wanting to get started with researching their family history, Nancy has given us some tips. What do you do? How do you get people started?
I tell people to start with themselves. Put down what you know about yourself, your parents, your birth date, marriage date, so forth, and then prove it. Find your birth record, find your birth certificate, find your marriage certificate. Do the same with your parents. Find their birth certificates and marriage certificates, death certificates if appropriate. That's the way you start, and then you branch out from there, because each generation, of course, doubles. So two parents become four grandparents and eight great-grandparents and 16 great-greats and so on. So you got a lot of people to search.
What about photos? How do those, are they useful? And do those play into the search?
Photos are wonderful if you can identify the people in them.
Yeah, if you can't, they're not, huh?
They can be frustrating. I know I have a photo album from Massachusetts that belonged to my great-great-grandmother. We have no idea who the people are in it. We know it's family, but we don't know who.
Some random people showing up.
But photos add so much, particularly if somebody owned a business and you can get a picture of the business, the store when it was open, or the livery stable or whatever. It adds to the story.
Well, great. Thank you for that information. That was Charlene Clemens Fox, and she is with the Genealogy Collection at the Ellsworth Public Library. Jamie, one area we haven't talked about, we did do a whole show on Wabanaki place names as part of this name series that we're doing on Maine Calling. We didn't really talk about surnames. That's something, again, in all of what you do, you've seen certain Wabanaki names rise to the surface. Talk about that a little bit.
Certainly there are Wabanaki names that are closely associated with tribal communities like Neptune or Atean. You know, then there's also anglicized or traditionally English last names. I think you have to look at the complexity of the relationships between Wabanaki people and settler colonialists and sort of the intermarriage and the adopting of the surname. And then, of course, the complexities with adoption, et cetera. But there are unique names that when you hear those names, you quickly identify those names. Ranko comes to mind, you know, several names that you would see that you immediately think Wabanaki community, Passamaquoddy or Penobscot nations. So I think that really tying those in, and you want to think about names associated with the community, but I think a good point to make is you don't want to limit yourself to those things. You don't want to limit yourself to the town or the place or the community. You want to be open because genealogy can lead you in lots of different directions, despite what the clues or the family stories have said.
That's the bottom line. It can lead you in many directions. Nancy's laughing. Let's go to Anne calling in from Camden. Hi, Anne. Go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Yes, I can. I think you might be on speakerphone, but that's okay. We can hear you. What did you want to talk about?
Hi. So I always knew that my paternal grandmother was a Bunker from the Frankfort, Maine area. But recently I was visiting Monhegan Island, and my son is living out there and mentioned that his landlord is a Trefethen, and there are Trefethens. And I thought, I think that's a familiar name from our family history. And so I looked up on our genealogy records, and it turned out I had a Trefethen who was a great, great grandmother who married one of the Bunkers. So I just thought it was an interesting connection, especially, you know, with what you all were talking about with communities and connections to communities.
Right. Nancy.
I'm smiling here because, Anne, I was working on this project that had to do with Deer Isle, and it started to spread out into Surrey, and then a connection was just mentioned with Thomaston with one of the names, and that is why I begin with looking at a very broad basket of information and narrow it down. And when, I think it was when Charlene said, she responded to Cindy's question about where do you start? Yes, start with yourself. And there's just no other way you can identify with some of these incredible people in history that we'd love to say we're connected to until we can really prove those links along the way. And that is one point I have found in Maine history. People will say, well, the Sewell family came up from Massachusetts after they landed after the Mayflower, and I know I'm connected because I'm a Sewell. And you have to start again at the very beginning. So, Anne, you did a great job by connecting those two families together, and now you've got a great space to spread out from there.
Yes, good job, Anne, and thank you for sharing that with us. I'll read a quick email here from Jay. I live in Deer Isle, though I'm from away. I've been told that before the bridge and causeway, there were only 14 surnames on the island. Such names as Greenlaw, Weed, Eaton, Heinsler, and Billings are heavily represented here, much more than on the mainland. And we can pick up on that, but we just need to take a break now. So much more to talk about. This is Maine Calling. We'll be back soon.
And we're going back to Maine Calling in just a couple of minutes, where we'll talk more about family names. But talking about family, we'd like to talk to you about joining the Maine Public Family. Hello, I'm Nick Woodward. Wardens of the Woods, perhaps my last name is. Joined by Keith Shortall. We're going to have to dig into that
one.
Yeah. But we would love to have your name join this family as a member, as someone who makes these conversations possible on Maine Calling. Easy to do. You call 1-800-866-1475, or you head to mainepublic.org. And you'll go back to Maine Calling, not only engrossed and interested the way we are, but knowing you're helping to make it possible.
You are. 75% of our survival depends upon people who, just like you, who are listening, who listen every day, who are part of this kind of arrangement, this family, as Nick put it, really is what it is. If you've already given, you're already part of the family, thank you so much. Now is also a great time to maybe rethink how much of a family member you want to be and increase your monthly gift, or become an evergreen friend if you're not. Any number of options open to you to do that. The number 1-800-866-1475, or you can do it online at mainpublic.org.
Yeah, and remember, you can join as an evergreen friend. What a great way, convenient way to join as an evergreen friend. You'll make automatic monthly gifts. Now, the amount is up to you. That's what's great about it. It could be $10 a month, $15, $20, $50, $100. You name it. It comes in all flavors. You decide what the service means to you. You decide what works in your budget. And then you decide to do something important, and that is maintain your public radio station and know that, as Keith said, 75% of what it takes to bring you everything you hear, whether it's Main Calling or classical music, everything in between, comes from people like yourself. 1-800-866-1475.
You know, we started Main Calling, I think it's now 15 years ago. Really? It's just, wow. It's unbelievable. 15 years ago, and our producer, Jonathan Smith, of course, having worked for the Diane Reen program for over a decade, brought instant skill and instant experience to this program, and now it's evolved into what it is today, offering these great conversations about names, which are really stories about families and about place and about history. And it's just one of the ways that Main Calling touches its audience and also feeds off its audience. 1-800-866-1475 or online at mainpublic.org.
And think about the inspiration you get so often from things on public radio. Just Main Calling, just today, are you now inspired to maybe dig a little more into your family history? Perhaps you have been. I know I have been. I'm kind of stuck in 1777 right now, trying to figure that out down East Maine and Canada and all that.
Woodward sounds very English.
It does, right? But here's the problem. I think he changed his name. I think he did something. So I need one of these genealogists on the show to help me out. Anyway, you never know what rabbit hole Main Public is going to force you down, because you're always discovering something new. That's what's great about it. It's this journey of discovery all the time, but it only happens through membership, through your support. Won't you help keep this journey, these discoveries going? That's at 1-800-866-1475 or at mainpublic.org. Now, back to Main Calling.
Welcome back. I'm Cindy Hahn, and you are listening to Main Calling. We're continuing our series, Name Calling on Main Calling, with a conversation about Main surnames, which ones stand out, and why, and what it takes to research family history. My guests are the Maine Historical Society's Jamie Rice and genealogist Nancy Prisk. Join our conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainpublic.org or post to our Facebook page or to Instagram. Again, the number for Main Calling is 800-399-3566. I said to send brief emails. We ended up with lots of long ones, but I think it's because people need to tell their story. So I'll read one here. This is from Deb Norton. She says, I have been able to trace my Norton roots way back to the 1200s, which was wonderful. But on my other side, I hit a stone wall with the name Atwood. I put my genealogy info out on ancestry sites hoping for a connection. I waited 10 years. Then I got a message asking, why do you have my great-grandmother on your family tree? As it turned out, my family was from the great-grandmother's first marriage, which she never told the second family about. It was such an emotional ride for all of us. We were able to meet at the cemetery where she was buried and are still keeping in contact. So my advice is not to give up looking. Nancy, I have to turn to you because I'm sure that resonates.
Yes, it certainly does. And even genealogists can get really mired in these details and have trouble finding records. One of the things that I have enjoyed working with clients on is proving a Mayflower connection or proving an American Revolution soldier connection. There's certain books that I use for this, but Mayflower and also DAR provide excellent resources of proven materials. And that is a really wonderful place to start. But again, you have to start with yourself. But when you get back to these names, and we'll do Mayflower in particular, so I mentioned earlier the Snows and the Hopkins. When we were heading back into those names, we knew once we got to the six generations from George Sewall, we knew that in that family, we had proven data from Mayflower. Same with the Snow family, Hopkins, Stephen Hopkins actually went to Jamestown. And then after his indenture, he goes to England, and then he's an experienced sailor and he helps to get the Mayflower over here. His family migrated up the coast of Maine, up the Penobscot River. Someone earlier mentioned Frankfurt. They landed in the Frankfurt area and continued going up to Hamden. The land that is still owned by his descendants, and we were able to prove that using starting with Mayflower records, that land is still there. And it's known to have geographic features that connect it to Wabanaki land. So it's a big puzzle and it all fits together.
You know, Jamie, you look at all this other history and other people's stories, but your own story is interesting, right? You did your own research. So tell us a little bit about what you found.
Yes, I think the best way to assist with genealogical research is to do your own, which I'm sure Nancy can attest. So I think my maiden name and my married name have two different kind of trajectories. My maiden name is Kingman, which is not a common name. You do see places like Kingman, Maine or Kingman, Arizona. But what's interesting about the Kingmans is that they're all related and they predominantly come from one colonial immigrant named Henry who immigrated to Massachusetts. But you can see them in the Midwest, in New England, and they're all one family, which is different than my married name, which is Rice, which is an Americanized version of Reese, which is Welsh. But on the Rice line, there's a very large contingency, and a lot of people have connected a lot of Rices through DNA. We were talking about that earlier. But the contingency that my husband's family is from is not connected into that larger pool. And through DNA has realized that there was this pocket in Western Massachusetts that sort of appeared in the early 19th century that is not connected to that larger branch. And you do see that sometimes when you see a pretty prevalent name like Rice, then, connecting it to the large group, or are you an offshoot that came at a different time? So even we were talking earlier, even if you see a common name like Sewall and you maybe think you're connected, well, if I'm a Rice, I must be connected to them. That's not always the case. So it's sort of two sides of the coin of every Kingman is a Kingman, probably from the same immigrant. And then Rice that has lots of different facets that you can't necessarily connect with the name.
Oh, that's good to know. Well, thanks for sharing your own tale there. Let's go to Steve calling from Topsom. Hi, Steve.
Hi. I'm calling to see if someone could tell me a little bit about the name Huzzy. They've been in Kennebunk. I know the family's been in there for generations, and it's an unusual name, and I'd like to know if someone could tell me a little bit more about that.
How do you spell it?
H-U-S-S-E-Y.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So, Nancy, you're nodding. That's promising.
I did some research on Hussey because I know a family that's down in the Ocean Point area, Booth Bay Harbor, and I've known them for quite a few years. And when the gentleman passed away, I read his obit, and I was curious to find out where the family had originated. I'd have to go back to my notes to be positive, but I'm pretty certain it was Gardner. So it's not that far from where you are now. I would kind of cast a net for Hussey families, and going back to what Jamie said a minute ago, I'm only guessing, you probably don't have one ancestor that came, but you probably have a pretty wide net of ancestors. And I would look around the Gardner area, Hollowell area. You could do some searching online if you choose to. Do remember that when trees are assembled and posted online by individuals, they are not necessarily verified. So don't use someone else's research to prove your own. But look broadly there, and also look down in the Midcoast and see what you find. I wish you luck. It's a name that's quite prevalent in Maine.
Well, I think it's important to note that Maine is a very town-oriented place. It follows a very Massachusetts model where records are largely found at the town level. at the county level eventually, and at the state level eventually, as you get about around mid-1800s into 1892, when the vital records were centralized at the state level. But before that, you really want to focus on the town. Knowing a town to look at will save you a lot of time.
That's very important. Thank you, Jamie. And thanks for that call, Steve. I'll read another email here. This is from Amy. My maiden name is White, W-I-G-H-T. When I was growing up in Connecticut, I always had to spell it for people. But when I came to live in Western Maine, where my father was from, when I said my last name, people would just automatically ask which way it was spelled. 50 years ago, when I was 16 years old, I traced my four paternal great-grandparents all in the Bethel area, whose surnames were White: Farwell, Twitchell, and Bryant. Back in those pre-internet days, genealogical research meant driving around to old cemeteries and town offices, and I spent one whole summer doing that. My son is the executive director of the Bethel Historical Society, and I work there too. My husband's roots also run deep in Western Maine, and I can't tell you how many times someone has come into the society to research their family, and we've discovered that they are some sort of cousins. So that's one of the fun things about genealogy. Thank you, Amy. Let's go now. Let's see. Let's talk to Robert, who is calling in from Bangor. Hi, Robert. What did you want to talk about?
Hi there. I'd like information on the surname Upton, U-P-T-O-N. My middle name is Upton. I have sketchy information on the name. I was told that we're from the Salem branch of the Upton family.
I wonder, Nancy, do you have any hints there?
I have a friend in the Booth Bay area whose surname is Upton, and I did a little bit of research there too. I found the name in that area in some old records. I've also seen it over in New Hampshire. So I would do the same thing that we've just been talking about, and that is, as Jamie mentioned, do a town search. One of the books that's published is the by Maine Genealogical Society, is the Southport Booth Bay, I think there's another town in there, Vital Records. And pulling a copy, I have one here, but I don't think we have time to go looking through it, but pulling a copy of that and seeing what you might find for family members with the name Upton in the Booth Bay area to start with.
Jamie, did you have anything to add, or we'll just
keep going. See that the earliest mention of Upton is in colonial Massachusetts. And so there's two great resources that I use to look in. There's a genealogical dictionary of Maine and New Hampshire. And that is the surnames, the earliest surnames, colonial surnames that you see in Maine and New Hampshire, obviously. And then there's a companion by James Savage called Genealogical Dictionary of New England that you can see the first time that names like Upton might appear in the colonial record, and then follow the towns from there. And it looks like there was a John Upton about 1625 from the Massachusetts.
Nancy, we just have a few seconds. Go ahead.
Absolutely. Robert, you said you were in Bangor. Go over to the history room at the Bangor Public Library and ask the genealogist there, and she'll point you to those books we've just been talking about.
Terrific. Well, good luck, Robert. Good luck to everybody now who wants to go digging and finding out more. Thank you so much to our guests today. Nancy Prisk is a genealogist, and Jamie Rice is with Maine Historical Society. Today's sound engineer was Sam Tracy. I'm Cindy Hahn, and you have been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.
The power of radio. Another really interesting conversation, one the kind of talk that you hear all the time on Maine Calling, and putting names to a place. Hi, I'm Keith Shortall, senior editor here at Maine Public, and I'm here with our TV production manager, Nick Woodward.
Hello.
And we're just taking a break out of programming here just to celebrate people all taking part, doing their part to make this whole thing work, this thing we call public broadcasting work. And by the way, as we approach the lunch hour, we would like to thank Ananias for providing these delicious sandwiches. They're doing their part as part of this sort of cooperative agreement that we have to provide you with conversations, with information, with news that you can trust. So thank you, Ananias. And thanks to everybody who's called during this drive so far. Nick, it's a great time, if you haven't done so, to join the family, as it were. The number, 1-800-866-1475, or you can do so online at mainpublic.org.
Yeah, go into your lunch hour knowing you're doing something great. You're supporting the station that you appreciate, that you value, that you're listening to right now. You know it's the right thing to do, so do the right thing. Call 1-800-866-1475 or head to mainpublic.org. The threat to federal funding for public broadcasting has been heavily in the news this past week, and that is a very real challenge to stations like ours. But that's not why we're here today. We are here today asking for your support for the programming you value. The news, your favorite shows, classical music, our educational programming that kids across the state rely on. That's what the spring fundraising drive here for Maine is all about. If you want to help on the federal funding issue, please go to protectmypublicmedia.org and sign up and have your voice heard in Washington. Again, that's protectmypublicmedia.org to sign up. You can do it there. They don't ask for money. That's just where you go to raise your hand to say, I believe in public broadcasting. I think we deserve it. Maine deserves it. The country deserves it. That's where you can do it. And if you want to help ensure it continues also financially, here's how you do it. Call, become a member, 1-800-866-1475 or head to mainpublic.org.
You know, Nick, I'm listening to this program in between our breaks here, and it really kind of re-stirred my interest in names. Yes. And places. And I wanted to ask you about your name. Woodward is...
Woodward. Well, we believe Wardens of the Woods. Sounds kind of obvious, but we think that's what it goes back to. So that's, we'll see if that's true or not. Now mine's easy. Shortall. What's going on there, Keith?
Yes, okay. So Shortall is not a common name. There are few in Maryland, many in Ireland, and many in Australia, and it's because it is a old Middle English name, and translated directly means short neck, which sadly is just all too appropriate in this case. But be that as it may, there's a story behind every name, mm-hmm. and a story behind every family, and those are the kinds of stories that we celebrate on programs like Maine Calling and all of the programming that we bring you here at Maine Public. Support that programming, 1-800-866-1475 or online at mainpublic.org.
Yeah, the story behind public broadcasting and Maine Public Radio are individuals, people from many years ago that brought us to today through their membership. First of all, thank you to everyone who made that possible. We are now looking for you to take us into the next hour, the next day, month, year. You can do it as a member. And even if you are currently an Evergreen friend, there's still plenty of room for you. A lot of Evergreen friends realize it's been a while since maybe I made that initial gift. They increase it $2, $5, $10 per month. Again, the amount is up to you. That's what's great about this service. You decide what it's valued to you in your life and what you can do for it. Call right now, 1-800-866-1475.
You know, as a staffer of the news department in my travels, I hear all the time when I mention where I work, so often you hear, oh, I'm an Evergreen member. Oh, I'm a sustaining member. Oh, and they say it with real pride, like genuine pride. And the reason for that is I think that they get a sense of true ownership in what we do here, and they're part of a family, they're part of a group effort, and it takes everybody to make this work. 1-800-866-1475 or online at mainpublic.org.
And you're part of a thriving public radio family that is getting bigger all the time, and this is listener supported Maine Public Radio.